When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Board Gamers Anonymous, the podcast about board gamers and the insane fun we have at the table together. This is Chris.
Hey, and this is Anthony.
And this is episode 486, the 2024 Board Game Olympics, Paris Edition. We'd like to thank all our Patreon and backers for helping us bring you a brand new episode. Hello, fellow Olympians. We are back. And in the spirit, the Olympic spirit of cooperation and game playing, we are going to talk about the latest and the greatest tabletop games that are based on the home city of the 2024 Olympics, Paris, France. Anthony, you're a big Paris, France fan, right?
Sure, why not?
Sure, right?
Yeah, Paris is a city that I could maybe someday be in. I don't know. I've played games about Paris. We'll talk about those.
I saw during the Olympics, like, I caught a couple of clips of all the different, you know, sports and things that were happening, and they had skateboarding.
Yeah, they do.
And I thought it was, I think it's like the first time, right?
Second time. They did it last second time.
And I think it was the women, was it Japanese? I think it was
the street winner was a 14-year-old Japanese.
Awesome.
Yeah, girl. It's not even like the only person who's like 14 years old competing in the skateboarding competition. Mm-hmm. I was like, I didn't know we peaked at 14, 15 years old at any sport, but apparently skateboarding is it.
And that's why we're tabletop gaming, folks.
Yeah.
Because everything else is peaked out at 14.
I peaked physically 25 years ago. Good to know.
It's all downhill from there, kids. Yeah. After 14, geez.
You imagine that's like the pinnacle of your life's achievements. Like, I won a gold medal when I was 14. What do you do now? I work for Kinko's.
But you do it with a gold medal, man.
Yeah.
And you skateboard to work.
Yeah. It's kind of how awesome. Cool you are.
Oh, poor Tony Hawk. He missed his opportunity.
Yeah, I know. That's the thing. They add all these games, these things into the Olympics that weren't there before. And you're like, well, what about the people who were really good at it for a really long time?
That's right. Give him an honorary medal just because, you know, you would have gotten one if we would have been,
right? Yeah,
I don't know, anywhere near modern as far as what's actually happening in the world as far as sports are concerned.
Right.
Although I bet you we see pickleball before we see anything else come up.
We will definitely see pickleball. Yes.
Jeez.
Baseball's finally coming back next time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. 2028 baseball. Which is crazy that it went away, because that's a global sport. People like baseball.
How did they get away with getting away baseball? Who doesn't play baseball?
I don't know. It's a good question.
I know it's American, but it's also played around the world. It's not.
Right. Yeah.
Japan, South America has a lot of big teams.
There are several countries in the world for which baseball is the most popular sport. Yeah. It's not even the most popular sport here anymore. So you can't even say that. It hasn't been for like 40 years.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just waiting for tabletop gaming to get there.
Yes, yes. Hey, you got Magic the Gathering on ESPN. We're getting there. We're getting there.
I don't know this offhand, but I got to believe there's something, right? There's got to be, I mean, billiards? Is billiards in this in the Olympics?
I don't think it is, but it seems like it could be.
Right? Because that's kind of a tabletop dexterity game.
Yeah.
There's a lot of variations, right? I mean, you have curling, but that's a whole other thing completely in a different season. So,
right.
But, you know, again, eventually, I mean, you'll probably see chess before you see anything else. Chess will probably be the first Olympic tabletop gaming thing. I mean, if you can ski and then shoot and then ski again, I can't see why you can't play chess.
I just feel like it's always going to have to be something where you move. I think you're right. I think the closest we would get is billiards.
Yeah.
Like, or darts.
Darts? Yeah, I could see darts.
Like some kind of bar game.
Axe throwing.
Axe throwing, yes. I want a gold medal in axe throwing.
Everyone loses to the Norwegians every year, right? Everybody, they're like, we could do this.
Scandinavians run the gamut.
That's right. They just pick that up. But that would be a winter sport, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're going to be talking about, in the spirit of the 2024 Olympics, we're going to be talking about all the great games that are Paris-themed, because turns out there are a lot of great games that are based in Paris. And maybe you have not come across them, or maybe this is a perfect opportunity while you have the Olympics playing on in the background to get a tabletop game to the table and then enjoy the ceremonies as they're happening. So that will be our feature review. But Anthony, before we get into our feature review, we should mention some of the awards in our industry, the gold, silver medals here. The Spielus Joris picked all of their winners, which is awesome.
Yeah, yeah, it's the big international, well, it's not international, it's the German Game of the Year award, but we treat it like the International Game of the Year because it's the one everybody points to.
It's like the World Series for baseball. It's not really the World.
Yeah, right. It's just the American champion, but we started it, so we get to call it the World Series. Yeah,
it's a little arrogant, I'm just saying.
Yeah. Well, it's American.
Yes.
I said that part.
It's kind of given.
Yeah. So the winner is no surprise. I guess it's a little surprise.
The winner is no surprise? I love that game.
Yeah, it's great.
Woo! That's a great game. What a surprise that came out of nowhere.
Yeah, yeah. So anyways, it's not a huge surprise because it was the most popular and it's the one that made the most sense, but it's also a little bit of a surprise because they've been going so light lately.
Yes.
That I really thought like Captain Flip was going to win because that's the level of game they've been giving the award to lately. But the winner was Sky Team. Which is a fantastic, unique, asymmetrical two-player cooperative game. It's great. It's perfect for this award.
I was really surprised, too. Chris and I talked about this a couple of weeks ago, and we both agreed that out of the nominees, Sky Team was the best game out of there, but we did not think that they would go that complex and heavy for a Spielus Joris game.
It's like once every 4 years, they're like, you know what? This year, an actual game that people will play that's heavier. And then the next year, a game where you move rocks around and tie strings to them. Like, it's, I don't know what it is. It's often such a light game, but this year, yeah, it's a good one.
I thought they would go with Darwin, Footsteps of Darwin, because I thought that fit their kind of motif.
Yeah, I played that and it's good and it's clever, but it's not doing anything unique or different.
I know, that's why I thought they'd pick it.
Yeah, that's true. I thought they would go with the super light kid-like one with the Captain Flip, which is not a good game, but
that's very light.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like Pictures or it's one like of the other ones, recent just games that they've done.
Yeah. But that's great. I'm really happy that they picked Sky Team. That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. So look forward to that being out of print for the next 6 months. It already was out of print for most of the last 6 months, so have fun trying to find that one. I believe it's on Board Game Arena, though, so you can just play it online, right?
There you go. Which might work better because you're not supposed to communicate, so I don't know.
That's true. You can't cheat because you're online.
That's right.
So Kinderspiel, which, just real quickly, is the Magic Keys. So this is the game for children, like actual children.
The Kinders.
The Kinders.
Yeah.
So players are collecting keys to unlock treasure chests and gather gems, which is a pretty common theme
That's
for kids'
adorable.
Games. Yeah, it's a cute looking game.
Does that actually happen a lot in life that we don't know about, that kids are collecting treasure chests?
They do in games a lot. I don't know.
You talk about like it happens every day. Hey, kids, what'd you bring home? Gems? Oh, okay, it's fine.
Well, if you go by German board games, that's what we're all doing.
It's true. It's true. We're not jumping on turtles either. So
no, it's true. You think about all the things that we think we should be doing.
That's right. I thought my jumping skills would be more handy in real life.
All right. And then the Kenner Spiel, which is the enthusiast game of the year. Uh-huh, so this is like the medium weight game, at least in our parlance.
Yes, it's closer to us.
Closer to us. More like the stuff we would play.
Yes.
E-Mission, also known in the U.S. as Daybreak. So we were talking about this. I didn't realize that the German name of this game was E-Mission.
Sure.
Because that's such a cool name. It's E-Mission, but also just Emission.
It really is.
That's good. That's a nice, fun little pun there.
You got to think about it for a second.
Yeah. I'm sure what it is, they started with the game, the name Daybreak, and they're like, oh, let's translate it for other countries. And the Germans are like, E-Mission. And they're like, oh, that's so good, but we already have Daybreak.
It's E-Mission. Which
E-Mission. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing we have to really say the words, because you look at it, you're like, I don't get that.
Yeah. So this is Lee Cock worked on this with another designer, and they put this one together to kind of tackle climate change in a cooperative way. So it's a game about climate change, but it also kind of fits into that ballpark of Lee Cock level games like Pandemic, which makes it a little more accessible than like almost any other climate change game that's been released. Like,
yeah.
And I know that because I try to find them to bring to class to teach with my students. And there are very few that you can reasonably do that with in an hour and a half. This is one that you can, which is cool.
Excellent. Yeah, no, I'm really excited about this. I mean, this was, I think, if I remember correctly, and you can check me because we have a podcast that actually gets reported and put out there in the world. I think that was the game that Chris and I thought would win.
I would have guessed that too. Yeah, if I'd been there.
Yes. So yeah, no, congratulations to all the winners. A lot of great nominees as well. They probably will also sell out, which is great.
Yep.
I know Chris was really pushing hard for Taco Cat Go Cheese Pizza Jr. Unfortunately, he did not realize that you kids pick up gems out in the real world. So
yeah, no, they don't care about tacos, cats, goats, or cheese. Pizza. So, they're big on pizza.
Yeah. No, great job. Great job. Germans know how to do games, man. So yeah. Bravo to them. And yeah, I'm really happy. Good job, Sky Team, man. And E-Mission, which is also still the cooler name than Daybreak.
Much cooler. Yeah, yeah, I know. I have my copy that here just says Daybreak. I'm like, I might.
Oh, no. You need to cross that with
tape. Masking tape.
Remember back in the day when like German games, you know, real German games, Euro games would come out, and you would have to get like the slips of paper to put them in the sleeve so that you could switch the German to English. So now we have to do the opposite way because that's cooler.
Yeah.
All right. Well, on our side of the pond, San Diego Comic-Con happened. And things happened during San Diego Comic-Con. A lot of things, in fact. A lot of announcements, a lot of spoilers. I think one of the biggest announcements slash spoilers, which was kind of sad and lame, but I guess happy for the people there, was they brought out all of the spoilers from Deadpool and Wolverine, and they showed the actual movie. We will not spoil any of it because we're not mean, because, you know, that's mean. And we don't do it for the clicks. We do it for the people, bro. But you and I saw this movie, Anthony. So no spoilers. Don't worry about it, because it's only been a couple of days and you should have some time to see the movie if you want to see the movie.
Yeah. I'm sure if you care a lot, you've already seen it based on how much money this movie's made. But if you haven't, we're not going to spoil it.
No, we don't do that thing.
It's Deadpool. It's more Deadpool.
Damn it. Spoilers, man.
Yeah, I know. Did you like Deadpool before? It's that with some other stuff.
Yes.
So it's I don't know. I wasn't super impressed.
It's more Deadpool.
It is more Deadpool. Little bit less story somehow. Somehow less story than previous Deadpools. The Deadpool part, lots of it.
Yeah. And the Wolverine part, actual Wolverine.
That's true. Actual Wolverine. Yep. Doing some actual Wolverine stuff.
Yeah.
Good.
No spoilers. That's out there and everywhere. Ryan Reynolds, Hugh Jackman. I liked it. They obviously had cameos, not surprising. And as Anthony mentioned, less story. So I wasn't expecting a great level of story, but it had less story, which was surprising that they could do that. But if you're there for, you know, Deadpool, then I think you get it. You know, that's, this is the movie for you. Cause it, like, it's as Deadpool as a Deadpool movie could be produced by Marvel. And they mentioned that several times. So,
yeah. Yeah. If you're coming into this, you're like, Deadpool's my favorite character. You're going to love it.
Yes.
Don't even worry. Deadpool's not my favorite character. I don't hate it. I'm just whatever. So I was not particularly impressed with the film, but I didn't hate it either. It was just like, this is fine. It's a thing I saw. I will never watch it again, but it was fine.
Again, I went out to see it earlier than I usually do see movies just because I knew it'd be spoiled because I knew there would be cameos in it. So I was like, if I don't see it now, I'm going to ruin any reason to see it. And then I'll just wait until video at that point.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that I was surprised by some of the cameos, which was fun. And the cameos in the movie and the characters and some of the deep cuts are the reason why you're there for the movie.
Yeah, yeah. I got spoiled on a couple, but somehow I didn't see the panel thing, even though it was over everything. I would have gone to see it either way because I have a teenage son, so he wanted to go, we were going to go. But I would say the best cameos I didn't get spoiled on, so I was happy about that. There was like two, there's a few in there where I'm like, oh, that's really cool. I didn't know that was in this, and that's, did not expect that.
Yeah. If you want to avoid spoilers, do not watch this stuff from San Diego Comic-Con because it does outright spoil the major...
Yeah.
Twists and stuff like that.
They seem to find it very fun to do so, which you know, kind of fits the tone of everything, but at the same time, if you don't want to be spoiled, ignore it.
Yeah, it's true. All right, a couple of other quick things. Rings of Power, they have their new sequel, second season's coming out. Fan of the first season, Anthony?
Never watched it.
Oh, okay.
I fell asleep during the first episode twice, and I figured that was the universe telling me that this was not for me. So
to be fair, you're not a big fan of Lord of the Rings. So,
yeah, no, except I am. And I don't know why this show is so boring. But
I watched the whole season. It's okay.
Yeah. I feel like I could get into it and I probably will eventually, but I don't know what it is. Like the first 40 minutes or so, it was just like nothing's happened. It didn't grab me in the way that other fantasy media does. They're really just like leaning on like, you love this world, right? So we're just gonna meander through it. Like, okay,
it's a whole season of setup for all the characters, and they kind of go out of their way to not do anything until the very end. And it's fine. I mean, it's, you can argue and say it's very bad, and I wouldn't disagree with you because I could see how people would feel this is bad because there is certain elements in storytelling that I was just like, oof, you know, like I see what you're doing and why you're doing it, but also like, you know, like it's not, again, it's one of these situations where they take material and they just kind of somewhat expand upon what, you know, they pull from the original materials, but really it's not the original materials when it gets on screen. It's a different thing. It's a totally different thing. If you go in and you go, you know, if you go into just like, hey, this is, you know, an alternate universe spinoff kind of thing, I think you could be okay with it. If you go into it and you're like, I love Lord of the Rings, this is Lord of the Rings, right? And then I think you're going to get, you know, beat up pretty bad with it.
Yeah, and honestly, I feel like it depends on how much you care about that world and how much you know about it. Like, if you're like, I've seen the original movies a couple times, that's a fun enough universe. You're fine, I imagine. If you've read literally anything else, and you're like, well, that's not what that character does or where they come in or who they are or who their background is. Like, and like, I almost never do that with any media. I don't care. I'm not precious about things, but for whatever reason, this particular world.
Did you see what you did there?
I know, I'm good. This particular world, I'm just like, well, why? No, but don't do that. So, yeah, it's been hard to get myself to go back to it.
Yeah, it almost feels like in a lot of ways they had some concepts and some storylines and some things that they wanted to do, and they kind of overlaid, you know, Lord of the Rings over that. It doesn't feel like a story that organically came out of the Tolkien books.
Right.
So a lot of it's the trappings of Lord of the Rings, but like you said, a lot of the characters don't act as I would think, having, you know, been familiar with the books and the materials for so many decades at this point.
Yeah.
Supposedly they've listened because I think Amazon got just blasted by people.
And they spent so much money on it. And they've committed to so many years. They're like, well, we have to do better then.
Yeah.
We can't just keep doing the same thing and have it not work.
And I think they ran into this one of those weird things where they weren't really either able to or didn't want to close down the comment section or the downvotes.
Mm.
So they took a real public hit from this too.
Right.
So the second trailer that came for the second season trailer that came out and the panel that they had seems like they are addressing some of those things. I don't know if it'll be better, but it seems like they are trying to address it. So if the second season's good, I think it will help you get through the first season.
That is 100% where I am. And it's the same thing with the House of Dragons
for
Game of Thrones. It's like, first season is not capturing me.
Nope.
I have not heard great things.
Nope.
If the second season's good, I'll go back and watch the first to get through it all. But there's no reason to commit to this if it's just going to be a bad show.
Yeah. So,
that's where I'm at with this one.
Yeah. I've watched Hot D, House of the Dragon. The second season is one more episode left. No spoilers again, because we're not doing spoilers, so don't worry about it. It's better, but it certainly feels exactly like they have a Wikipedia article with a couple of bullet points. And then the rest of the time, they're just kind of walking in. Like you can almost feel and see like the characters just pacing around, waiting for the next bullet point to kind of pop up.
Yeah, well.
I will say, though, the second season is better than the first season. Although, I don't know, Viserys, I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, I think the final episode will kind of show us if it does a thing.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. They're taking a 300-page book that was basically a history lesson and turning that into a multi-season TV show. So
yeah, it feels like the later seasons, not the worst season, but it feels like the later seasons with Game of Thrones, where they just didn't have writing to go along, like didn't have dialogue.
Right.
There's not a lot of dialogue between the characters. There's a lot of like, moments and conflicts, but there's not a lot of just like strategizing. And the season's not as long, so they're not doing a lot of like character development or, you know, getting the pacing together. It's like, how long has it been since you went there? I don't know. It's either been 3 weeks or 3 months or 3 years. I have no idea the timeline.
Yeah.
So season two is kind of better, but also season one had also had some unique aspects to it that I liked. So I'm holding on because dragons
be cool. Dragons.
Also The Boys, they have their final season coming up next year, give or take production issues and such. I did watch the complete season that just passed. Some of the best actors in sci-fi, fantasy, superhero things are on that show. Again, since it's working off a comic book source material, the acting is very good. So if you're there for the actors, you will not be disappointed. But as far as story is concerned, it's a waiting pattern. Like next season, the final season is the season. And if you are familiar with the comic book whatsoever, you know what that season's about. So this season is just like, if you really love the characters, it's okay to go on with like a season of a journey of like someone's struggling, someone's changing, but nothing definitively happens in that season until the very, very last episode. Which I liked. I really liked the last episode. I thought the last episode was, you know, good because it actually did a thing.
Mm-hmm.
But the acting throughout has been very good. So, but they also announced there will be a prequel series. So Soldier Boy and I can't remember the other woman's name. The
Stormfront,
Nazi. They're doing a prequel. So they're going to go back to the forming of, you know, all of where basically where all the superhero stuff comes from. And it's Nazi roots. So, yeah, that's going to be a thing. So you're going to basically get the Supernatural brothers back. They'll both be on that prequel series. So
that's funny.
Yeah. So, again, if you know, I think it's season two of The Boys, and you met Soldier Boy, so You'll have a sense of where that's going. So I've enjoyed The Boys, kind of. I mean, the season was more just like messy kind of stuff, but it's fine. Yeah. Legend of Vox Machina, season 3 is coming up.
Yeah, no, this is a show that I keep meaning to watch. It's on my list because it's I only heard good things, but at the same time, I have so many things to watch.
Sure. I've seen the first
team here.
Yeah, I've seen the first two seasons and I really enjoyed them. There are definitely episodes and moments where the budget just doesn't do a thing. So there are certainly some episodes and seasons where you're just like, you guys ran out of money. Like it's like the quality of the art just drops off a cliff.
Yeah.
From time to time. So last season, you know, cliffhanger kind of thing. And again, no spoilers. If you've watched the actual tabletop role-playing game and how they play that out, you probably already know all this stuff. So again, no spoilers. But it leaves it off a really cool point. So really excited about season 3. It's been a long time. Totally understand. But I'm really excited about it. Strange New Worlds gets to season 3, which again was iffy because Paramount has been going through, will they stay? Will they be purchased? Will they bankrupt themselves now at this point?
Right.
But it seems Strange New Worlds will be coming back for season 3, which we might have mentioned previously. That's been out. That goes along coupled with Lower Decks. Season 5 will be its final season. Anthony, are you caught up with Lower Decks?
I am. I am indeed. I quite enjoy Lower Decks, even though I cannot remember most of the references. So it's like watching that show is funny because it's like a vague sense of things. I'm like, I think I remember that. I think I know who that is. I think I have a sense of what's going on here. And then maybe I go back and watch the episode like from TNG or Deep Space Nine or whatever. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I did watch that. But it's funny on its own merits. You don't have to know all those things.
Yeah.
That's why it's such a good show.
It does the cameo stuff and the callbacks and the member berries in the best way possible of anything I've seen.
Yeah.
Like, bar none. Like, they seamlessly transition into it and out to it. And like you said, it doesn't affect your enjoyment of it. I really sincerely hope they bring Lower Decks back because I think it's been such a great series and it could go on for 10, 20 seasons just because there's so much content, but also because they're really developing their characters. It's not just like, oh, I like Star Trek or I don't like Star Trek. Like there's actually like some real cool character development in a cartoon series. So I mean, people should try it. I mean, it's that the creator itself was from Rick and Morty, I believe. So like the original team that made Rick and Morty so revolutionary.
Yeah.
On the Marvel front, the Russo brothers are back and they are going to be directing Avengers movies. The two big upcoming ones, Secret Wars, which is a really fun classic. If they go the classic way, there's also other versions of it. And Doomsday. So Kang is out and Dr. Doom is in. Which is weird that they call it Doomsday, because I think that's going to confuse people.
Yeah, might. I wonder if they're just like, ha, we took the name, you know, James Gunn, you are not using that.
That's right.
Not in the name of any of your movies.
So it's good that the Russo brothers are back. They did the best, probably the best movies that were out there in the Marvel Universe. Obviously, Infinity War and Endgame. And I guess the Marvel's like, we've been bleeding. Let's bring back all of the people who did the good things and gave us all the money, which means Robert Downey Jr. is back as Dr. Doom because
that makes sense.
That was a thing that happened in comics in a What If.
Yeah, because that's what you build your $2 billion franchise on. I can't think of a way that this isn't cynical, so I don't really have anything positive to say about it. It's always cool to see Robert Downey Jr. doing anything in the MCU. Yeah. So, and he'll do good job because he's Robert Downey Jr. I just don't see how they write this in a way where you're not like, ugh, okay. Because you could have done it it's either one of two things, right? It's either like a variant, whatever, using all the multiverse nonsense, or it's like some twisted, weird, you know, Von Doom inside out trap, right? It's going to be something funny like that. Either way, it would have been way cooler for it to be like a surprise, right? Like, They're fighting Doomsday, and they're just like, oh, I gotta beat him up. And at the end, he like pops off his mask, and they're like, oh my god, it's Tony Stark.
and he'll be like, who?
And now we know the whole time, right? I I mean, and then maybe there's a reason for that, but I think the main reason for that is they want people to be excited about this.
Yeah.
And nobody's been excited about anything in the MCU now for a little while. Yeah. So it feels cheap. It doesn't mean it will be. It might be awesome. It just feels cheap.
Like you said, I think they must have been panicking for quite some time, and they were like, how much money do we need to throw at the Russo brothers and Robert Downey Jr. to come back? And I'm really happy to have the Russo brothers back. I think they could, I think some of their recent stuff hasn't gone over so well, but I think they're extremely talented. I mean, I watched their originally when they did Community, the TV show.
Yeah.
I love Robert Downey Jr., but I don't think he should have came back. No. I think I don't, like you said, I don't think there's a way that they can write this that it doesn't undercut his death as Iron Man.
Yeah.
I think it's just, I think you and I, like, and a lot of people out there are very familiar with the comic book universe and the multiverse, and we're very comfortable with it. And we're very happy with it. I think for the general fan out there who just watches the movies from time to time, I think it's going to be like, oh, so he didn't die. Oh, I guess he did. He's a variant, but also I don't believe that.
Yeah. And even as a comic book reader, that stuff always drives me a little crazy.
Sure.
Because like as a writer, like you want things to have stakes.
Yeah.
And for there to be a reason for something. And when you're reading a comic book, you know that there are never stakes.
Yeah.
Because no one is ever actually dead. And that's fine. You like lean into that. It's part of the suspension of disbelief. But it always rubbed me a little bit the wrong way. In a movie where like the time frame is compressed, it's only a couple hours, it's deeply frustrating. So like, even with the background in comics, I'm just like, I just don't like this multiverse stuff because it removes the stakes from character deaths and interactions. And
I mean, everyone, you like to see you like to see the actors you like to see, and it's cool to see them in a different light. I mean, for two reasons. I think one, because I think it doesn't allow, I think at this point, I don't know. I think it doesn't allow you to grow Marvel, right? I mean, if you're going to bring back the same actors again and again and again to do roles in movies that they've played previously, again, cool, I guess, because that's marketing, right? It's easier to sell something that's already been sold and people like. It's a known product.
Right.
But I don't think it lets you build for the future, because how many movies is Robert Downey Jr. really going to do as Dr. Doom? Dr. Doom is a mainstay in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
Is he going to do this until he's 90? Like, because that's really Dr. Doom's role. He is one of the big bads in the Marvel Universe. And like, he is instrumental in a lot of the major events that happen throughout, you know, the Marvel, especially Secret Wars.
Yeah. And he's not like one of the big bads who like gets defeated and goes away.
No.
He's Dr. Like, Doom. He finds a way to be around.
His whole shtick is he's got robot versions of himself.
Right.
So, you know, you could kill him off, he comes back. And he kind of did that with Kang. So I think it's already going to have a bad taste in people's mouth. The other thing, too, is I'm really disappointed. And Marvel's done this throughout. This is not a new thing. But, you know, Dr. Doom, Victor Von Doom is Eastern European, right? And he's a Romani. And they're not tapping into the ethnic roots that plays such a big part into the character.
Mm.
It's just another generic American guy playing, you know, somebody in a culture that's not been truly representative. And I think that adds to the character. I mean, that's the value of the character. That's what makes Victor so interesting, because he doesn't come from an American ideal,
right?
And the country supports him. His country supports him. So, I don't know. It's kind of what they did with Scarlet Witch, where they try to kind of go along with the fact that she does come from a particular ethnic class, and they just wipe that away completely by the end.
Yeah. Two movies later, the accent is gone,
and they're just like, and then later on, they're like, she watched TV shows, so that's okay. And you're like, all right.
Maximoff, where's that from? I don't know, Burbank.
That's right. Exactly. So a lot of big news. Surprisingly, a lot of big news out there. A lot of great stuff coming up. And hopefully you all get a chance to see it. And hopefully we do get a chance to see it, because I think it'd be good. Anthony, you should watch these things. Last one, I guess I forgot one, and I think probably the most important one for you. Fantastic Four. First Steps.
Yeah, I'm excited about this one a lot, actually. And I know there's been three Fantastic Four movies. I know none of them are very good. I do have a soft spot for that first one. But I think you could absolutely make an amazing film, television, anything with this, with the first family, right? They're good characters. It's good relationships. It's good world to build in. Just nobody's done it well yet. Right. And the cast is amazing. They're going for like a period piece.
Yes.
So more multiverse nonsense, but it is, at least they're doing it back in time. I think that's a cool way to do it. Like, let's go back to the '60s, and that's just a cool aesthetic. So you get to, like, hopefully some like Kirby, like inspired artwork.
Kirby, man, that's world. A deep cut.
Yeah. So like, I think it could be extremely cool. It could also be just more like, you know, baiting people with cameos and future whatever nonsense and not be very interesting. But hopefully they lean into it and make it weird. Make it weird, make it interesting, make it complete, and not like half the movie is just setting up for the next 2-3 movies, which I know is what they're going to do, but hopefully not. And that'll be good. But so cautiously optimistic on this one.
I think it's the best way to go because I think they're really set in that kind of, I don't know, is it the 1960s aesthetic?
Mm-hmm.
It, like you said, but futuristic. The Fantastic Cars seems to be in this.
Mm-hmm.
So retro futuristic kind of version. I think that would be a really fun aesthetic to kind of play in. And I think they'll make the movie look really cool. So I'm excited about that. I think it'd be nice to have a different tone because the recent, you know, Marvel Disney Plus series have been so grim. And so, you know, just, I mean, Secret Invasion and other stuff has, you know, just, it's not been fun to look at or enjoy in any kind of way.
Right.
Like, we're gritty. It's like, are you really? Like, even the new Captain America movie that's coming out, I'm just like, I don't know if I want to watch this.
It's just not fascinating. And it looks slick and polished and interesting. And I love the idea of Indiana Jones as the Red Hulk. That's so cool.
But I know.
Also, it's just, give me something fun and lighthearted and like, solid core of family relationship, and I think that's what we'll get.
I understand that they boil things down to the MCU model because it sells for them, and they get very scared when you do different things. But I think the different things is what people love about comics to begin with, that everyone has a slightly different off-center take on their particular superhero world, and it's all those different takes that really provide a rainbow of enjoyment. And then when you bring them all together, you could straighten out, you know, flatten the edges, so to speak. So you got to lean into it. I guess that's the point. Lean into that kind of stuff. So, right. I mean, they did with Deadpool, right? Again, I know it's not necessarily Marvel, but you got to do that.
It is now.
So, yeah, no, a lot of good stuff. It is and continues to be a golden age for us out there because all the stuff we grew up with as kids is now out there in like real meaningful television. It's mainstream. So, and again, there's going to be bumps and bruises in the Fox universe with all their movies and the Sony universe with all their movies, which are still coming out and still quite bad. But Marvel's the best at doing it so far. I don't know. It's a thing. It's still so far.
Next year's going to be weird because we have Fantastic Four going up against Superman.
And Superman's going to be interesting.
And they're both kind of kicking off stuff because Marvel right now is in a holding pattern. So Fantastic Four is going to kick off that.
I'm glad they're doing a Superman when he's not evil because that's like everything I'm seeing like the last couple of years.
Give us happy, hopeful Superman.
Jeez, you forgot what Superman was like.
Yeah.
So
He's the one guy who's always in a good mood. Come on.
He's the Boy Scout. He's like... The whole idea of Superman, the greatness of Superman is not his strength, but it's his compassion for Earth and for the home he grew up on. Like, they keep missing that fundamental concept of Superman. Like, he's like Jesus. I'm like, no, it's never been Superman.
No.
Never been that. He's a Midwest, small town boy trying to do good by the world, won't give up to help and take care of and save people. Like, that's how he you know, he contrasts, but it's also the same as Batman in a way. It's a different take.
Yeah.
Instead, you're trying to give him like evil, dark, twisted, you know, I don't know. It's just not good.
Nope.
No. Not a fan. So All right. We'll see how it plays out. We'll talk more about it in the future. But Anthony, let's get on to stuff we want to talk about. Let's talk about our acquisition disorders.
All right. So I am going to talk about a sequel game that was recently posted on GameFound called Epos. It is Epos Agentis game. And the reason it's Agentis game is because it's basically the sequel to Gentis. So Gentis is, who knows if I'm saying that right, because every time I say it,
I have that same thing.
Doesn't sound right. but who knows? It's Latin. I think it's right. So it's designed by Stefan Risthaus, who has done a handful of games. Most of them are good. Arkwright is like his other big one. And it's one of those fantastically deep, heavy Euro games that you don't expect Gentis to be so accessible. And it is. So it's like an ancient civilization game. And the reason why the game was always so interesting is it has this like timing mechanism, where time is a resource that you have to utilize because you're building up the civilization over time. It's relatively abstracted, but it is one of my favorite Civ games. It works really well in a lot of interesting ways. Now, fast forward to what we have on GameFound today is Epos. And this is the unofficial spiritual sequel to Gentis. It's coming from Spielworks, who also originally published Gentis before it got picked up by Tasty Minstrel. Before they went out of business. And so this one is, it started, I guess, as a bunch of different expansions that Risthaus had been working on for Gentis and just kind of developed into its own game. This according to the owner of the company. And so when you look at the game on the table, there's a lot more going on. There's like a full map now, something that didn't really have in Gentis. You have your own personal player mats with slightly less abstract representations of these civilizations. You have the, you know, more robust technology and everything else that's involved. There's a lot more going on here. And the really interesting thing, maybe, because sometimes it's interesting, sometimes it's not, is that there are different scenarios that you can play through. So there's kingdoms, tributes, infrastructure, expeditions, trade, progress, turbulent times, and new era. Like different versions of a Civ game that have kind of been built out here. And then you can combine any four of those to build a campaign, like a multi-game campaign, which kind of creates the replayability element, but also just like a lot of different ways to kind of put these things together. It's something Gentis didn't necessarily have because it was really just like a streamlined single direct thing. I still don't know if I want to back this or not. I do have Gentis. I have the deluxe edition that I found an inexpensive copy of like last year. And so I really like that game. I think it's really condensed and streamlined in a way that a lot of other Civ games are not. It's one of the reasons I like it. So taking that and blowing it up into a bigger, longer game, I'm like, I don't know if I want that. But the things that are being blown up here, I think, are interesting, right? So, you know, we have cities and provinces now. So, like, more of a map element. Movement is important now. City effects, card mechanics. Like, things that are a little bit more in line with other Civ games and the genre as a whole. Like, it's definitely not a 4X game now, but it has some of those elements kind of sprinkled in. They're still claiming it's, like, 90 minutes, which is still great. Because my biggest fear if you're taking Gentis and making it longer is suddenly that it's a 3-hour game, and I don't want that. So I don't know. I have it bookmarked. It is up on GameFound for another 2 weeks. There's a lot of glowing feedback from other game designers on here saying that they love it. Fabio Lopiano and several others. Oday. So I will waffle on this for a little bit more. It has not made a ton of money, but the Spielworks games tend not to. For whatever reason, they don't get a lot of backers. So this is kind of in that same vein. But they always fund and they always ship. The most recent one I backed through them was the Uwe Rosenberg game that's escaping my mind at the moment, but the two-player canal building one. So it's up there now. Epos, Agentis game. It's a campaign take on a classic civilization game, and I'm very interested in it.
Yeah, I'm really excited that they came out with this. Gentes was a game that when I remember seeing on the crowdfunding, I was like, oh no, this is just really basic, really simple, so just unappealing. And then I played it and I was like, why did I not back the deluxe version of this?
Right.
And I picked up a regular copy, but I've been searching for the deluxe version of it. But I really like so many of the different elements, especially the time element, because I don't understand why that is not incorporated more into Civilization games. I think Seven Wonders has the three different ages of cards, but so smart. And as you mentioned, this might be a little bit more of a challenge just because the size and scope of the game, but I generally like that idea. Because again, I like the general concept of it. And if it's a spiritual successor or a variant from the Marvel Cinematic Universe, I'm down for it. Because now I'm looking at it, I'm just like, again, I'm getting that feeling, I'm getting that vibe. I'm just like, this kind of looks kind of boring. But then it's going to be really fun to play, damn it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's the hard thing too about Spielworks games, always look boring.
Sure.
They're never pretty. And then they turn out to be very good because, and then someone else picks them up and makes them prettier. And you're like, oh, okay, that's a good game now.
The thing is, it's $107.
Yeah, Spielworks games are always very expensive because they're such small print runs. They famously, before crowdfunding, would only print 1,000 copies of a game. And then they would be very expensive, be like $100 or more, back when games didn't cost that much. And now it's basically the same thing. Like, they get 600-700 backers, they make 1,000 copies, and they're still $100.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
And it seems like you could pick up Weimar here and there?
Yeah, that's another one, too. Like, they have copies of Weimar. I don't know if they're reprinting it or if they just have them, but Weimar is hard to find.
Yeah.
So it's still expensive. It's 120 euros, but I'm tempted because it's a game I'd like to play.
Absolutely. Same here. Love like both of these. Really, it's a shame that they don't get out there more. They don't produce more copies of their games.
I know. Someone else, the thing is if it does well, someone else will probably pick it up. It always happens eventually. Like Granja was a Spielworks game, Gentes was a Spielworks game. Trying to think of a couple others, but there's been a bunch, and then they get picked up by other publishers and they get much bigger, broader versions later.
Cheaper?
Yes, usually.
Okay.
Unless it's super deluxe. Like, get La Granja in the big box, it's more money, but.
Sure. Like you said, the Rosenberg game, the, starts with an O, the Canal game.
Oranienburger Canal.
Yep, there you go.
Thank you. Gotcha. Yeah, that's being re-skinned, I think, in a different format. And that one wasn't too terribly expensive because it was not too much in the box. It's like $50 or $60, but
sure.
It's still ugly. It's still an ugly game, but it's just very good.
Why are you so ugly?
Yeah.
That's my charm. Okay.
Yeah, I guess.
You do you, brother. It's fine. Yeah. All right. Well, on the opposite end of ugly and complex, Rise of Babel. This is on Kickstarter. Become the builders of the greatest tower known to man. Build your deck of cards and use elephants to transport resources and place tiles. This is on Kickstarter. You have until Thursday, August 8th, to back it. So by the time you hear this, you have a couple of days to check it out. So what initially intrigued me is I'm a fan of multi-use cards, and a good deck builder is always a friend of mine. And I love myself a good civilization city building kind of game. So, and also the artwork looks great too. So I was like very much intrigued into this game. So basically what you're doing is you're drawing your typical five cards because that's how deck builders work. Thank you, Dominion. And then you get to play all five cards from your hand. And depending on the card, there are different actions that you could take, a top action or a bottom action. And basically what you're doing is you're upgrading your warehouse of, so this way you can hold more materials, and then utilizing your elephants and your people to move those materials from your camp to the tower. Now, the tower and I'll talk about this because this is really the kind of kicker for the whole game. The tower is just, at least in the base game, just a flat in the board. And you're trying to get your materials onto this 3x3 square. And depending on what type of materials that you're able to place and where those materials are, you take a look at the scoring on the right side, And you will score points or lose points based upon how those materials are out there arranged. Now, everyone's placing their materials out there as well, so there's opportunities to score off other people or help other people throughout, which you don't want to do because it's a competitive game. And primarily, that's it. It's a very light deck builder. You're able to obviously put more cards in your hand to give yourself more, you know, diversity of different actions. And as you build each section, a new board comes on top of it where you'll be able to build more complexity. Now, remember, the story here is all about the loss of language. And there is some confusion tokens that come onto the board, which makes things more difficult in getting your resources out there and meeting your certain capacities. If you'd like to play this, it's on Tabletop Simulator. So there you go. There's free plays. Play it. The Kickstarter has a lot of previews, and I mean a lot of previews from a lot of different people. The production looks very nice. It's pretty basic as far as a, you know, board game goes, but looks nice and colorful graphic design. The artwork looks great. Here's the kicker. If you want to back the game, go for it. $49. $10 off MSRP. Now, what they really want you to get and buy, because again, it's all about the tower. And if you're going to play this game, you want to have the tower actually be a tower. And that means plastic. So building up three stages of the tower here is going to cost you, in the big box, $175.
Gross.
So you're going to get plastic pieces that go along with this, which are not going, you know, they're going to be squares based on your player color, with pictures of the different items there. And there's going to be little elephants with their little trailers that you're going to put the materials on. So, yeah. They're saying the retail price for the plastic version is $215. So, and there's expansions that go along with this as well, if you want to make the game more complex.
Yes.
Yeah. So, again, appreciate the concept. Like the look. Good deck building game. Good resource generator. You know, engine builder situation going on here. Fairly reasonable base price for $49. But again, I don't know if you want to, you know, raise this tower if you want to do it on a very flat board with very flat pieces on top of it. But again, it's a very light game as far as actions and techniques and things that you do. So I don't know, or don't necessarily think at this moment, not having played the game, that it is not worth the $175, which is kind of sad. So, Rise of Babel, you know, say something or don't, or I don't know.
just put the game out there, and if people like it, then be like, now do you want the stupid expensive version?
Yeah.
Like, I get it. I'm sure there's plenty of people who are going to back it at the higher level, right off the bat, and, you know, give all the monies away when they've never played the game and don't know anything about it. But it's why are we doing this?
So here's the weird thing, right? So they had a goal of 35,000. They're already past that, like 36 and change. And the base pledge, 67 people have backed, right? Because, you know, those are the people who, like, I like the general concept and mechanics here. I want to back this. There's also a backing level with the expansion. 67 people have backed that. And then there's a more flushed out with all the expansions and stuff here. 81 people backed it. Anthony, the 175 deluxe version, right? How many people do you think backed it based on the numbers that I just told you?
At least half. So
333.
Ugh, jeez. See, this is... Okay, it's your money. Do what you want with it, folks. I don't know.
I'm just kind of annoyed that people do this and they don't invite me over to play. Just
so. I know. Yeah.
If you're going to back the silly, big, gigantic plastic version of a game, you should at least invite us over to play the game. That's all I'm saying.
Rampant consumerism, whatever. I want to play.
That's right. You know, it's a thing. You know, it's environmentally destructive. I don't know. You don't necessarily need the super... Look, I'm a man who's got super deluxe editions of games that do not deserve super deluxe editions.
That's true. Yeah.
So...
Let's not be too hypocritical here.
No, I was just... You look at the Kickstarter, you're like, this looks very cool. The deluxe version... Because I think that's the moment where you're kind of like hit. It's, will the deluxe version make a very simplistic game better? Like, will it add more to the game? And typically that answer is no. I mean, it just really is. But yeah. Sometimes if you like it that much, you purposely buy the upgraded edition because to justify it, but it typically doesn't. I don't know. It's kind of sad. Just try figure out how much you're going to be manipulating the pieces that are deluxified. That's really the way I kind of go with it.
Right.
We talked about this with Luthier, which was like $200 and something. So I might back that more than before I back this, but it's expensive out there, kids.
Here in America, work is in trouble. We've offshored our manufacturing, sent away good jobs, and lost so much ability to make things. American Giant is pushing back against that tide. They make high-quality clothing for a summer wardrobe you'll love, all made right here in the USA. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit DiscoverSouthCarolina.com.
All right, so that's all the games that we want to hit the table. Let's talk about the games that did get to the table, and we'll let you know if those games are a buy, and you should go out and purchase those games, because they're awesome, plastic or not. We'll let you know if those games are a play, and you should sit down and enjoy them, plastic or not. We'll let you know if those games are a dodge, and you should avoid them, plastic or not. Or, in fact, those games that dread burn, and don't burn plastic. It's very bad for the environment. Definitely recycle it, my friends. Anthony, what did you play this week?
All right, so I got a chance to get Dune: War for Arrakis to the table, finally.
Ooh, Spice Must Flow, man.
Yeah, Spice Must Flow, and it's been sitting on the shelf, not flowing, since January, February, whenever this game came in.
Yeah.
So it's a big, sprawling CMON production, which should be no surprise, that's what they do. But what really got my attention, the reason I picked it up, is that it is designed by the two designers behind War of the Ring. Marco Maggi and Francesco Nepotetto. So I knew we were going to get a big, epic, two-player, asymmetrical war game set in the world of Dune. And that is exactly what this is. But and it has a lot of things in common with War of the Ring, right?
Hobbits?
You'd think, right?
Like, I know.
Yeah. I kept looking. I mean, I guess they're hiding really well.
They're small. You would
they're
not
in the
know.
Sand. They're,
you would think they were just children.
Yeah, yeah, there's under the sieges. It's fine.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So the main thing here, and so there's a lot of things to break down. I'm not going to go through all the rules, but like the main thing that was very familiar, structurally from War of the Ring is you have two factions that are asymmetrical. One is very militarily powerful and has unlimited troops. Whoa. That's the Harkonnens, right? So, like their guys die, they go back to the pool, they come back on the board. The other side is hiding and sneaking around a little bit more with a lot more leaders and potential things you could throw on the board. And those troops are limited. That's the Atreides. They're not as powerful. They have fewer actions. So if you remember War of the Ring, the Fellowship has just the four dice at the start of the game. And the Shadow has eight. And this is the same, right? You have double the number of potential actions at the start of the game. That changes as the game goes on. But interestingly, unlike War of the Ring, you can't increase the number of actions that you have as the Atreides. You just have the four. But there's a few other things thrown in there that are interesting. So it's not boring, but it's just you have to be more economical and efficient in how you do stuff. The other thing that's similar to War of the Ring is you have the two decks of cards representing two potential factions. So like the Atreides has the Atreides cards and the Fremen cards. And the Harkonnens have the Harkonnen cards and the Corsili or Psyduckerr cards. And so you draw those one of each per round, but then you could use them for different things. And those are actions that you can take. Another thing that's very similar is just the way that the actions work. Like each die has multiple action faces on it. You roll them at the beginning of the round, you lay them out, and those are the actions you can take. There's a wild for the treaties, similar to the free peoples. And you can also spend those dice to play your action cards. So if you know War of the Ring, the basic, very basic core functionality here is very similar, right? It was pretty easy to kind of wrap my head around because I knew those core pieces. Now, the rest of the game does feel like it doesn't feel like they took War of the Ring and just slapped it on a Dune IP. It's built around this really well. So you have the map, which is broken down into three different types of terrain, I guess four. You have the desert, of course, you have the plateaus, you have the mountains surrounding the cities, and then there's like the kind of protected desert part in the side. At the beginning of the game, all the Harkonnen pieces are inside the mountain pieces in Arrakeen and the other like locations that they can't be gotten to yet. And then the Atreides players and the Fremen are kind of spread out over the map in the sieges. So the sieges are on the map. The goal of the Harkonnens is to get to the sieges and destroy them. Underneath those sieges is a value. Those values tell you how many victory points you get. So similar to War of the Ring, you just have to destroy things. That's how you're going to win. There is no like corruption component here. So there really is just the one victory condition for the Harkonnens is to get to destroy all those things. But because of the size of the map, it is much smaller than War of the Ring. It's easier to get to those places and it's easier to destroy them. So the game is actually a bit shorter, at least in my experience so far. I'm sure it could go longer depending on how people play up against each other. It's less spread out than like Middle Earth was. The Atreides, on the other hand, have these three different tracks they're trying to move up. And those are going to be based on different prescience cards you get. So these cards will come out at the beginning of each round and you have to accomplish various goals. And the goals will be like, have Jessica and Paul in the same location in a siege at the end of the round, right? But these are public. So the Harkonnens know what you're trying to do, and they can try to stop you. So you have three goals every round. Those are going to give you those points. You have to decide how you're going to balance that out. Overall, the game was a lot of fun. Not surprisingly. Like I really like War of the Ring. I really like Dune as an IP. And it works. It flows very smoothly. I had the same feeling playing the Atreides as I do, like playing the Fellowship. Like you're kind of put upon. It's very difficult to do well at first. It feels overwhelming, but there's so many things that balance that out and give you options and let you sneak around. Like the end of every round, there's weather, right? The storms come through and they hit the Harkonnens. They don't hit the Atreides because we are friends with the Fremen. We go underneath, you know, we go in the sieges. We can ride the sandworms and move around a little bit easier. The sandworms can be controlled and they can go destroy things. The Harkonnens need to produce spice. If they do not produce spice, they start losing dice. These different tracks go down. They lose dice. They have less actions in future rounds. They also have these bans come into effect that will stop them from doing various actions on their turns. So the game like self-balances based on how well each side does. The one thing I'll say is learning the game, similar to War of the Ring, there's balance things in there you have to figure out, right? You're going to have to play the game a bunch of times to kind of wrap your mind around it. So, for example, from the Atreides side, I kind of left a few sieges alone, forgetting that the Harkonnens could just go in there and destroy them very easily. Like, you want to spread out, and there's a lot of prescience cards that give you points for spreading out. But if you do spread out, like to go destroy harvesters or just to complete your prescience cards, you're leaving the sieges undefended. And if the sieges are undefended, that's free points for the Harkonnens. And they'd only need 10 points. It doesn't take very long to get the 10 points. And there's only those, I think, 8 sieges. I can't remember exactly how many. But you destroy those, game's over. So you can't leave them all undefended. You have to be strategic about it. But you also have to, like, sacrifice some of them. You're like, okay, that one's gone. Just is, right? From the Harkonnen side, you really got to, like, get your troops out of the mountains, get out there, and start destroying stuff as soon as you can. Because if you wait too long, the Atreides will just have a bunch of different ways to get the points they need and to hold off the inevitable. In terms of the game like how it ends. That's always interesting too, because the Atreides have to wait till the end of the round. Unless they can destroy Arrakeen or take it, they have to wait till the end of the round to see if they've completed their objective. The Harkonnens win as soon as they get to 10 points. They don't have to wait till the end of the round because there's no way for them to lose points. So it, like, when the first time I played it, it was this back and forth of like, if the Harkonnen destroys this last siege, they win. So I need to throw everything I have at to defend that, right? Then it came down to luck a little bit at the end. I have the points I need to win the game as Atreides, but I need to get to the end of the round, right? My opponent doesn't know that because it's all hidden information, whether I've accomplished my goal or not. But it's, you know, it becomes like how much I'm focusing on protecting that shows them, like, you know, I'm pretty close. So it has the hidden elements to it that are really interesting. It has the combat that's really interesting. It has the card and dice play that's really interesting for War of the Ring. The characters are more, I don't want to say more present, because the Fellowship characters are important in War of the Ring, but here they're like on a player board in front of you, and their actions can be activated once per round based on the die you play, which is very interesting. So it behooves you to get them out, to recruit them as fast as possible. And both sides have those characters in a way that, like, in War of the Ring, you didn't really have a lot of the named characters unless you had the expansions thrown in there. So I love this. I think it's fantastic. War for Arrakis is a buy. Wow. I don't like it better than War of the Ring. Oh. I will say that. But I am a big Dune fan, and I think this is about as good as you could do for a two-player strategy game around this IP. I think it's fantastic. I have not played with the expansions yet, the two that came with it, the Spacing Guild and the Smugglers. Honestly, I would like to play both factions like three or four times before I do that. But so far, it's been a lot of fun, and I think they nailed it. So War for Arrakis, great game.
That's high praise.
Yeah.
Considering where it's coming from. And the two expansions, do they play together or just one or the other?
I actually don't know. I know one of them adds in a bunch of new units and stuff. Oh, and cool. The other one is just kind of the Spacing Guild, I think, is the more interesting one, where it's throwing in the option to, like, you have like these ships that are available to kind of move things around the map more interestingly. Gotcha. They bring reinforcements and stuff. The Smugglers, they smuggle things, I guess. Yeah, it's a neutral faction, I think. Sure. It just kind of throws things up. There is a solo mode too, which I find interesting. I have not played it yet, because War of the Ring famously never had one. They never made one for it. For this, they did, probably because it was going on Kickstarter and Simon told them they had to. So I will play that sometime in the next week or two, and I'll let you all know what I think. But yeah, it's good stuff. I'm glad I backed it. I was starting to be like, am I ever going to play this stupid thing? But I finally got it played, and it was really good.
Excellent. No, that's great to hear, because it's a great pedigree, a great IP, and it's hard because it's another super crunchy big two-player game, and those tend to be hard to get to the table.
That honestly is probably the biggest problem, because now I have four of them and they're all great. So it's like this and Star Wars and War of the Ring and Battle for Middle Earth, like Battle Five Armies, they're all great. I'm like, it really depends on what IP you want to play, but
sure.
Each of them benefits from playing the game a lot, so it's hard to really get deep on any of these, I think.
Lifestyle game, man. Excellent.
I know. That's what I would tell anybody. Like, pick one. Pick the IP you really like, and just find somebody who also likes that and play with them.
It's true. Well, speaking of lifestyle games, I got to play an expansion that was recently up on Kickstarter. This is one of our favorite games of all time, Spirit Island. This is Nature Incarnate. This came out in 2023. It was on Backer Kit from Greater Than Games. And this was yet another expansion. So Spirit Island, as wonderful and imaginative and incredibly creative as it is, has gotten to that point where it's kind of eating up everything. It's just like so many expansions, so many different pieces, so many combinations of spirits to kind of throw together. So this expansion brings 8 new spirits. And they are of the more complex flavor. So you may remember there was a recent Spirit Island that was in the big box stores and Target. which was the lighter, simple spirits, which was like plus one defense or plus one attack. This is the granddaddy. This is the complex of the complex versions of spirits. It's not beyond anyone's capability or capacity to kind of play, but it is certainly, you should certainly know that going into that. This is definitely the more challenging side. There's a new additional adversary. There's more major and minor cards, event cards, you know, blight, fear cards. In particular, what you probably want to pay attention to here is, again, and the reason why you're backing this, of course, or playing this is because it has those eight new factions. It also has a new feature to it, the Incarna. This is replacing like the little power chits on the board. And basically, I think it's five of the different spirits that come into the game actually use this particular token. And the reason for it is, I think it's just a lot simpler. You don't have to have as many components in the box because it's one little kind of token that you can flip over from like, it's got one power to now it has two powers instead of having a lot of pieces on the board. So they're trying to kind of manage that throughout. So it's kind of smart as far as that's concerned, especially if you're at that point where you have so many additional pieces from some of the other expansions that you might bring into play. What you're really here for is the spirits. So there is Embered Eyed Behemoth, this giant mountainsides turtle that comes into play. Of course, as you would figure, it is slow as far as the powers are concerned, but its powers are very offensive. So once it gets going, it does a lot of damage to the invaders, but it does certainly take some time to get out there. So the Incarna, you place those tokens on the board, and then you're able to do real damage. But you're also doing damage to the natives as well, so you have to be very careful about that. Next up is Hearth Vigil. This is obviously a spirit that is supporting and protecting the native inhabitants, the Han, in the game. So if you do have those villages out there on the map, it's a really good opportunity to defend as much as possible and provide as much support utility in the game. Next up is Breath of Darkness Down Your Spine. So this is one of the fun spirits that I like to play with a lot because it creates a lot of fear. So you get a lot of those event cards coming out there. So this is a fear-based spirit. So primarily what this spirit's best at is picking off the individual invaders that come onto the board, putting them off the board, generating fear because you just scared the hell out of them from dragging them off the board, and then causing a lot of the events to happen as quickly as possible. Next up is Relentless Gaze of the Sun. As you can mention, this is a sun spirit, and it's throwing down a lot of power on a particular spot. So it's very focused, as the sunlight would be, and it does a lot of destruction. So if you need to take out a big, you know, location of buildings and invaders, this is the spirit for you, but it's also going to do a lot of damage to the land, a lot of damage to the inhabitants of Dahan out there. So very specific time and place to use the powers here. Next up is Towering Roots of the Jungle. This is a very highly defensive spirit. It's obviously protecting the forest areas on the board. So again, a good combination with some of the other spirits to offer defense for their kind of massive offense. This is probably my favorite one, Dances Up Earthquakes. This is a great spirit because what this is able to do is it can use some of those high cost power cards early in the game and cause a lot of destruction, but you have to plan pretty far in advance because it takes a while for those events actually to take place. So you really need someone else to kind of hold the land together while you set up these big combos. And I just find that a lot of fun. Next is Wandering Voice Keen's Delirium. So this is all about a very mobile spirit in the game. Controls a lot of the particular areas, is able to keep the invaders from doing too much. And basically, it's all about pushing. So pushing different spots on the board to clear out those different areas so that they don't react. A lot of fun. And then finally is Wounded Waters Bleeding. This is a pretty cool spirit because it's all about starting pretty weak but it allows you to get a lot of elemental tokens revealed early on. And then throughout the game, it builds up power and becomes more powerful by the end. So high offense, high control, a good opportunity. So a really good selection of complex spirits. These are definitely not beginner spirits. We had some challenges kind of matching the best spirits to play together because they are so specific and they are so complex, but we really enjoy them. I also really enjoy the art here too. The box really doesn't, I mean, it has some of the spirits there, but the artwork is different than we've seen previously. At least it looks a little more mature. It looks a little more detailed, and I really enjoyed it. So Spirit Island, Nature Incarnate, get to buy for me.
Great. Love me some Spirit Island. It's cool to see all the new spirits, especially like three expansions in, still hitting like that.
Oh yeah, they found some really interesting ways, and some they ramped up the complexity, but not in a bad way. It just it really falls in line with, you know, thematically what the spirits would be, and I really love that they really think that out. So Infinite Combinations, definitely one of those lifestyle games out there. All right, so that's everything that hit our table this week. Now on to our feature review. Our feature review this week, of course, we've been talking about it. It is the 2024 Board Game Olympics. This year, the host country is Paris. So in honor of Paris hosting the Olympics this year, we're going to be talking about the greatest games based in Paris. Anthony, what do you have for us?
All right. Kicking it off, the highest rated one on Board Game Geek from the list that we pulled is a Stefan Feld classic. I say classic because it's almost 20 years old, which is crazy. The 2007's Notre Dame. So in Notre Dame, you are taking on the role of heads of influential families. You all know the drill. medieval Europe, you're running some family.
Yeah.
And in the shadow of the cathedral, you are trying to build up your reputation and prosperity and all that good stuff. So you are controlling different boroughs and building them up and trying to generate wealth and power. And then there's rats.
Yeah.
Rats spread the plague, so watch out for those.
This is one of the kind of the Feld games, which was about negative points.
Right. Yes. Like everything's such a point salad. This is like the anti-point salad.
That's right. Ha ha. You think you have points. Rats.
Yeah. You tell it's one of his early games because then he's like, this isn't fun. Points. More points.
I really enjoyed this. This is a great game. It's just it's a fun contest throughout.
Yeah, you know, it's fantastic. And it really does feel like you're in Paris.
Yes, very much.
Next up, we have a game that is just called Paris.
Seems like they're cheating. Just saying.
Yeah, so this is the whole list. We're done. this was a Game Brewer Kickstarter from 2020, actually,
yes.
And designed by Kiesling and Kramer, mm-hmm. the famous duo. At the center of it, you have the Arc de Triomphe, and then the city builds out from there. It's a midway Euro, and you're just kind of building out 19th century France for, mm-hmm. wait for it, influence.
Oh!
Yes.
Twist! Twist!
Yeah, now you're playing, I don't know, real estate investors or something? So basically wealthy families in Europe. And you're trying to build
up. I'm starting to see a pattern here.
Yeah, rich people getting rich. That's
oligarchy, brother.
Oligarchy for the win. It's an interesting game, and it is really like it is Paris. Like you are building up the city. Like there's the World's Fair, and you have the Eiffel Tower, and you're building up all these different districts, and you have these different tiles you can pick up that represent famous buildings in the city. It's not particularly heavy, but if you really like Paris, this is a game for you.
It was surprisingly light considering the price. I think Game Brewer's game prices were all kind of high, and I think that's also kind of part why they went out of business.
Yeah,
but it was a lot of keys. It was a really, really interesting concept. You have the arch in the middle, the round board, which is really nice. So I never got a chance to play this, but I was always waiting for this to go on sale.
Yeah,
and they went out of business. So that happens too these days, unfortunately.
Right. Yeah. All right. Next up, we have Legacy, the Testament of Duc de Crécy, and this is about, wait for it, building up an influential family in 18th century France. So this one is literally just building the family, though. You are not, it's not the capitalism behind the family or the oligarchy itself. You're just trying to maintain your own legacy. takes place in pre-revolutionary France, so like 1700s or so, and you're just trying to build up your family line. The name of the game previously was Nobles of Paris. The seat of power in France was very close to Paris and in Marseille. So it's a worker placement game, and it has a very interesting tableau building element with the family tree that you're building out. You don't see that in a lot of games, but this one does it in a very interesting way. And one of the kind of, I don't want to say early games from Portal games, but earlier than like the current wave of stuff.
Sure.
It's over 10 years old now.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting as far as the artwork was concerned. That kind of drew me to it. But yeah, pretty fun. Kind of reminds me of Guillotine, which I don't think that made our list.
It did not. No. Aww. I know it didn't show up in the filters. That's a good game, though. We'll throw it at the edge.
Definitely.
Paris, La Cité de la Lumière. Mm-hmm. And I refuse to play just because they left the French in there and I can't pronounce French. It's a two-player game with polyominoes.
Whoa.
Games for you, Chris.
Hard pass.
Yeah. No, it's set during the World's Fair when they are showing off electricity and it's public use for the first time. So it's about the illumination of Paris. You are building things up and spreading these different buildings to illuminate the city. So it's got a cool art aesthetic, except once you open it up and start playing it, it is just polyominoes. So.
Who knew that electricity flows through polyominoes? But now I know.
You do. Yeah, maybe that's why you don't like them. You got zapped one too many times.
I know. Turns out.
All right. You want some French Revolution games?
I do.
Bastille.
All right.
From 2018. This is from Queen Games. Christophe Baer. And you are fueling the French Revolution. You are the leader of a revolutionary group, and you are trying to, wait for it, gain influence.
Would it be a rich family?
No, because you're part of the revolution.
Okay.
You're rounding up the rich people and sending them to the guillotine.
It has a lot to do with a rich family. That's the point.
Yeah. So it's a bidding game. It's an auction and bidding game. And you are bidding on different buildings around the city and trying to build up you need money, influence, you need leaders, you need weapons, all that good stuff. You're trying to get all the things you need to have a successful revolution. So... And it's like, yes, we're trying to have a revolution, but also we want to be the best faction in the revolution so that we come out on top. So there's also, you know, the political machinations that go with that. So, you know, French Revolution, always fun.
Yes.
Losing their heads and stuff.
Which was actually part of the Olympic opening ceremony, if you saw.
Yeah. I mean, they still celebrate Bastille Day every year. So they're like, down with the monarchy. Forever.
Yeah.
Colors of Paris. This seems like a game more up your alley.
Yes.
Painting and stuff. So in this game, you are a painter in Paris, and you are participating in the Bateau Lavoir, a competition that is held every year in Paris. Some of the famous winners of this being Cezanne, Monet, Renoir. So it's a management game in which you're taking the different paints that you have and managing them and trying to build, the resources that you need in the right format to make the best painting. It's contract completion, essentially. You have these different painting contracts. You're trying to complete them with the different cubes that you can develop. It's cute looking. You get little painter meeples, very French looking painter meeples.
Yeah, I played this. I'm not sure if I played the Colors of Paris or the Old Masters versions.
Okay.
I played a version of this. I did play this. It's good. Good looking.
Great. Yeah. I have not played this, but it looks cool.
Yeah.
Another one in Paris. We have Dinner in Paris.
Ooh.
So you are trying to be the best restaurant owner in Paris. So there's a new pedestrian square and you were trying to capture and bring the most people to you to generate, I don't know, influence, something like that. It's not particularly complex or anything. It's a pretty light game, but it has some contract completion and it's not polyominoes per se. There's like these little cubes you can put out, but they look like polyominoes.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, it's the go-to, man. If you don't know what to do, it's Tetris.
Sounds good.
All right, these last three, and not forgetting Guillotine, of course.
Of course.
A wonderful card game about chopping off their heads. The last three are about the Paris Metro. So we have On the Underground, Paris in New York. We're specifically talking about the Paris map. And this is a route building game where you are building up the Paris Metro lines. So you have different destination cards and you're trying to match up the different stations and get your passengers from one place to the other.
Mm-hmm.
Fairly simple, but kind of a fun, satisfying route building game. We have Next Station Paris, which is in the Next Station line of games from Blue Orange. So very light line drawing network building game. So you are drawing on paper.
Oh!
but there are not dice in the box, so don't get mad. This one's on Board Game Arena if you want to give it a go. It's
nice.
It's an interesting, fun little, very quick. It's Blue Orange, right? It's very accessible. Yeah. It's very family friendly.
Nice.
And then Metro, all the way back to 1997. This is the Dirk Hen game of Alhambra fame, which did not win the Spiel des Jahres, but was recommended that year.
Sure.
And is about moving passengers around on the Metro. So it has like that Suro mechanic where you're laying all these tiles out and it's building this complex maze of different paths. But in this case, you score points for however many tiles your passenger goes over. So you want them to take the longest possible route. So you're terrible at building train routes, apparently. It's the theme of this one. I really like this game. I've owned it several times over the year.
Sure.
I find it I like the tile laying, moving people through routes thing.
Mm-hmm.
This is a good one.
Nice.
And then Guillotine, which is guillotine people.
Yeah, that's a general France thing.
Yeah. Off with their heads. Paul Peterson's classic 1998 game. You line up people in a row. There is an actual cardboard guillotine in the box. And you're trying to manipulate the row of people and who's going to be guillotined when.
So it's humorous. It's comical. Somehow.
If you're all about eating the rich, it's a good game.
Yeah, you could play Rococo, which is not specifically Paris, but it's France.
Yep.
And then you can play Guillotine.
Before and after.
That's right. Look at all those fancy people. I know how to take care of this.
Those fancy people aren't sharing their breakfast.
That's right. Their fancy clothes and their fancy parties and leaving the poor people eat cake, I guess. So, all right. Well, there you go. A great list of Paris-inspired games. We hope that you enjoy this list. We hope you enjoy the Olympics. Get some of these games to the table while you're watching the festivities and all the different games and trials that are happening out. Best of luck to all the great athletes. Congratulations to everybody. If you participate in the Olympics any kind of way, shape, or form, you are the greatest of winners until, you know, tabletop gaming gets in there. Then we'll play along with you and, you know, you'll be very sad when you look at how we're not in shape in comparison to all of the rest of you. But again, and who is? No one is, because you guys are the best. So,
that's true.
Yeah, absolutely. So, until next time, this is Chris.
Hey, this is Anthony.
And we'll save you all. I see you at the table. Take care, everyone.
Mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.